G.I. Joe, Calvin and Hobbes, and Charles Atlas. It's comic books next on Tom and Hank Talk About the 80s. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Hank. Did you hear my chih at the end?
I did hear it.
Okay.
I did hear it. It was cute.
It's like the ocean.
How are you, Tom?
Like an ocean in a squeaky chair.
Oh, well, we need to take care of it before we start.
I don't think about it. It's not my fault that these chairs are vintage. Oh, wait. Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
It's exactly my fault. That's so, all I have to talk about.
Jeez, I am.
That's all I have.
I am tapped out. I am.
No one wants to hear me talk about Disneyland anymore.
No.
So I'm not going to talk about that. Everybody's tired of hearing me talk about Depeche Mode and New Order.
Actually, I don't think people are, because you don't really talk about them very much. We talked about them in like the first episode.
Well, here's something that happened. Last week, it was last Thursday or last Friday.
Oh, you say it like I say it now. It makes me happy. Thursday.
I went and had drinks with our friend Sean.
Oh, yeah, you did.
It was great. It was lots of fun hanging out with him. And
it was last Friday.
It was last Friday. Okay, yeah, because we got migraines on the Wednesday. And then...
Recorded on Thursday. Sean on Friday.
Yeah. Something like that. So that was cool. We went to the place I DJ at, the Swell Bar, here in Alameda on Lincoln Street.
Oh, is that where you went?
Lincoln Avenue. Is it Lincoln Street or Avenue?
Lincoln.
What's the difference between a street and an avenue?
You know what? I would love to explain that to you one day. Today's not the day, but I would love to explain it to you, because I bet there's a very interesting story.
There's not. It's just some jerk off going, hey, you know what? Why don't we call it a street? Guy's like, it's an avenue. He's like, I'm calling it a street. I'm like, fine. I'm calling mine a cul-de-sac or a court.
Do you
or
know
a
what
circle.
The plural of cul-de-sac is?
Cul-de-sacs?
Cul-de-sac.
Cul-de-sac-i?
No, cul-de-sac.
I disapprove.
But it's real.
It's not.
This harkens back to your no real dogs.
Speaking of dogs.
Yeah.
There's a new dog.
Okay.
At work. It peed on my carpet. My new carpet at work.
Oh, you did. It is new carpet in your office.
I fought to get that carpet because the carpet inside the store that I work at is foul and covered in mold and baby barf
and
pee and gum from people's shoes. And so I got carpet. It took me a couple years to get it. I had to go to the hospital and say that I had a horrible eye infection in order to do it because it was causing an allergic reaction. Sometimes I make up stories.
I didn't know, but that was all true. And then... Now a little dog is in it and peed on it. I don't know if it's little.
It's very little and it's very, very cute. Also has a incredibly pungent urine. I think the smaller the dog,
the sign of a pure breed.
Yeah, well, that's up for debate. But anyway, I didn't accuse it of being fake because it's obviously a real dog. It's standing in front of me, pissing on my floor. What am I going to say? You're not a real dog. You're not actually peeing on my floor, but you are.
Wait, is it a he or a she?
It's a she. It's a cute little...
I don't know what its pronouns
are. Cute little terrier. Uh-huh. That looks at you like this.
With those teeth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's really freaking cute, though. And loves me. Like, runs up and, like, hopped in my lap. Like, within 3 minutes, it was, like, licking me in the face and, like... I love you, Tom. And I was like, I love you too, little dog. And then like 10 minutes later, I was like, get the fuck out of my office, you little piss bag.
Wait. I like piss bag an awful lot. I might introduce that into
people
my repertoire.
People go for shit bag, but I'm, you know what?
No, piss bag. There's several connotations to it. There's layers. Mm-hmm. There's a funniness to it, yet a disgustingness to it.
You know what they call plural piss bag?
Pisses bag. You know what? We are good at this.
We're not. We're not. Do not
listen. It's got to feel good to you. Okay, listen.
So what I need is vinegar and something else to get that smell out, because spraying... chemical carpet stuff, it just gives me a headache. And I've had a headache, not a migraine, but I've had a headache all day. I thought I was going to get a migraine.
Is it vinegar and lemon?
Jesus, I hope so.
You know what? I bet we could look it up very easily on the inter.
I'm going to take 10 minutes and do it right now.
Do you know what several interweb is? Interweb.
Interweb.
Interweb. But yes, now my original question of asking the origin of the dog is, when it urinated on your floor.
Pissed.
Piss bag. Did it stare you in the eyes?
It didn't.
Okay.
I don't believe I was in the room when it happened.
So,
besides... Don't piss on my floor as well.
Well, I mean, that's the thing.
Don't come into my office and be like, hey, I'm Hank. I can do whatever I want.
Well, I have tried. I've tried.
Don't.
And then you always shoo me into the restroom.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I like it better on your carpet.
Everyone says that.
So this is a big, this is always a big, kind of the last part of September's big birthdays for our group.
Yeah.
A few dear friends of ours, Courtney.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know.
Are all kind of grouped together. Okay. And so your girlfriend Megan's birthday is coming up this weekend.
It's on Sunday. And I'm taking her to see Chelsea Wolf.
Oh, yeah.
So that's going to be awesome. Because fun.
Is that on Sunday?
Yeah.
Oh, it's on her birthday.
On her birthday.
That's fun.
At the Regency Theater in San Francisco. So I'm looking forward to that. Because I'm a peripheral Chelsea Wolf fan because I love her music, but I know it through Megan, but I don't have any of her records. Hmm. And so I'm sort of new to her, I love her music. It's great. And she seems to be quite a performer. So I'm really looking forward to going to see that.
That'll be fun.
And then one of our favorite bands, your band and my favorite band, White Lies. And if you're into 80s music and you need something new that's contemporary, that's not from the 80s, but gives you that feeling, that beautiful 80s synthy, dancey,
with a really
new wave feel.
With a really, the lead singer has like a really kind of eccentric way of singing. Not really, that's not the right word, but he's a performer.
He's got mannerisms that are soulful.
And he's so good. And I think we've talked that we went...
Yeah.
We went to a show on Valentine's Day a couple years ago. We were like, bye, everybody. Yeah. And we've just been kind of waiting. And so the other day on Monday when this new song came out, you texted me and you were just like, listen to the new White Lies song now.
It's so good. It's like 8 minutes long. It's almost 8 minutes long.
Yeah.
It's just great. It's beautiful. And that's the first track they've released off the new album. Mm. They're going on a European tour. In February, they'll be in Europe still, so we can expect maybe a summer tour from them this year.
Fine.
In the U.S. But they're great, and their new album, just the first song already, I'm like, oh, it's so freaking good. So I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, me too. I was really excited about it.
White Lies.
White Lies.
Formerly known as Fear of Flying.
Yeah, but was that even an album, though, that they...
No.
Did they... Yeah, they just started... No, it's great. I was so happy. I listened to it over and over and over and over. And even, like 3 minutes of the 8 minutes is a keyboard solo. And it's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. I would catch it. And if you like the music that we talk about, you're going to like it.
Wish I had that soundboard with the saxophone noise on it.
No, it's got to be the...
Sorry, I'm going to interrupt you.
No, I love it.
I'm going to do it the whole time.
Well, you usually do.
Also, a friend of mine's birthday coming up at the end of this month as well.
Who?
Hank Hedlund.
Oh.
Perhaps you know him.
What? Really? Realistically, I didn't know you. I thought you were talking about someone else.
The correct answer was, of course I know him. He's me.
He's me. Shaken, not stirred. I will be 49 years old.
Oh, my darling. Oh, my darling. God.
Oh, my God.
Because minor 49er.
Yeah, I didn't get football. It, but it's still a sad song that I'm singing. sitting in my...
Is that the one where she gets run over by the stagecoach?
Probably.
It's going to be.
Yeah, 49. I'm 49 on September 29.
Wow.
So your golden birthday, which I never heard of until I was in my late 20s. Your golden birthday was when you were 7.
Yeah.
Mine was 29.
You turned 29 and 29, 29, 29?
No. I turned 29 on September 29th.
Oh. Mine's a little bit cooler.
Golden 7-7?
That's like a fake dog. Mine's cooler.
It would be even better if you were born in 77. 7-7-77?
That's when I turned 7. That's why it's so cool. That's why it's my golden birthday.
Holy sh!
That's why 7 is my lucky number.
You turned 7 on 7-7-77?
At 5:17 a.m. I know, it's cool.
Did you know how cool it was then?
I did. My parents must have written the Scotts Valley Banner, the local paper, because there was a little tiny article written in it about me, saying that Tommy Levigagios was turning 7 this week on 7-7-77, and it said, with a set of numbers like that, the kid ought to go to Vegas. That was the last sentence in the article.
Was there a little picture?
No.
But you were so cute.
I was cute. In fact, you're still cute. I forgot. I have a cute picture to show you. I'll show you later.
You do?
Yeah.
Can I post it on the...
Yeah, I think everyone will want to see it.
All right, great.
I'm very cute.
Into it.
I'm probably like 9.
Can I see it?
Yeah.
Do you know what you're doing in the photo? Like, were you at an event?
Well, I'm at actually an airfield... probably in the Eastern Sierras or the Mojave Desert somewhere with my dad.
I may know this.
Perhaps you do.
You've got on a little blue shirt.
I do.
Your little page boy. And you're standing by a plane, right?
And what's my shirt say, though?
Is it Star Wars?
No. It's pretty cool.
It's like, hey, good looking.
Well, it's very similar. I'll show you. You know what? I'm sorry. I don't have it yet. It's on my computer at work.
Do you know why I know it?
It says Porsche. It's a Porsche t-shirt that says Porsche, yes. And then it gets lighter and says Porsche, and then lighter, yes. And then it just fades out to nothing.
Your dad posted that on Facebook like a year ago.
Oh, yeah.
Of you.
Yeah. He found a bunch of slides because he used to take a lot of slide photography.
But we should put that up because that's a really cool photo of
it
you.
It is. It is.
So birthdays all around, yay.
Yeah.
And this week we are talking about comic books.
And
slash newspaper, the funnies.
Comic strips.
Comic strips. Yeah, I called them the funnies.
Yeah, the funnies.
And, like, to me, you mentioned this yesterday, and it's something that we had never even written down. And, like, right away, it was just such a rush of memories when you said, let's do comic books. Did you read comic books? And I said, yes, but I bet we read really, really different comic books, the two of us.
I'm sure of it. I'm sure of it.
Having nothing to do with each other.
You read Smurfs and I read Death in Hell or something like that.
Yeah, you read like war comics.
Combat.
And, yep. And, combat and I read Wendy.
Well, I read those too. Wendy and Richie Rich and
Richie
all that
Rich
stuff.
And Casper.
Know, Casper.
And Wendy was the witch, right? And she was like Casper's friend. All those three are kind of the same. Close companion. And then... The Archie comics, like Archie, and then you could buy the books of Archie.
Yeah.
And I've talked several times about my grandparents lived on a lake in Minnesota, and so I would spend my summers there, and I would go to Detroit Lakes with my grandma to the big newsstand, and I would get the ones that I couldn't get at the little general store at the end of the road. Uh-huh. Like, they would have, every week, you know, new comics would come out, and I would go down every week and get Archie and... Richie Rich, Casper, and Wendy.
I love reading those.
And I did too. And I would read them over and over and over. I'd put my silly putty on them and take the image off. Yeah. But then when I would go to Detroit Lakes, I knew that I could get the Family Circus books. Do you remember Family Circus?
Totally remember that.
And it was just, it was a single frame comic. And it was, I believe they were religious now that I look back on them. But it was a family, a dad and a mom, and they had three little kids, two little boys and a little girl, and they were kind of pudgy and cute, and they would get into little problems, and I would read those books over and over and over, and then really, like, one thing that I should have concentrated on, I just thought of it right now, but in the 80s, Garfield was humongous.
Huge.
Garfield was like a phenomenon starting in the 80s and continuing for quite a long time. But it was really one of the first things that I remember besides like Star Wars that was merchandised. Because remember, you could get those, you'd put them in the, you'd put them in your trunk or you'd put them on your door top, and it was just like Garfield's butt. Like he got caught in the door. Do you remember those? Yeah. And it would just hang out.
Stupid.
And, but Garfield, they put out, so that was a daily comic strip, mm-hmm. and it was also on the weekends as well. So it was a Sunday color in the comics in the paper, and then it was a daily strip. And so then he would put out books of all those daily strips.
All those books are still in print.
And they're still in print. You sell them at the bookstore.
Yeah.
And I loved those because you could just read them again and again, and you could just get into a rhythm of reading them. And he, you know, especially because they were in the comic strip, they were serialized, mm-hmm. you know, for the most part.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
you knew what was going on. And, you know, Garfield is this orange cat. Who hates Mondays. And he's just grumpy and he loves lasagna. And he also lives with a dog named Odie, who's just painted very, very, I mean, if I was a dog, I would be very angry because Odie was painted as a real dum-dum.
I think I remember Odie's, like, either tongue getting cut off or tied around his face.
Tied around his face a lot.
Something like that.
Tied around his face. It wasn't that violent. I mean, it was, like, tied around your face violent. Yeah. And his ears would always get tangled up and stuff. And he was a real dummy.
Yeah, he was.
And then their owner was John. Mm-hmm. And John was exasperated a lot of the time because Garfield would eat all of the lasagna. You know what? Here's the thing. Stop making lasagna.
Also, don't feed it to your cat. That's just the basic, basic rule. Don't piss on the carpet. Don't feed your cat lasagna.
This is a real themed episode.
Wow.
Here's you to your lasagna piss bag.
That's a character in one of the comic books I'm talking about. Lasagna piss bag.
He's Italian.
You know the kids are going to love this episode.
Yeah, we have a lot of children listen to this episode, to this podcast.
Hopefully it's blocked.
But so, yeah, and then you could buy just anything Garfield, you could buy it. I mean, the movies were only made like a decade ago with Bill Murray as Garfield.
I didn't know there was, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know there was Garfield
movies. He voices Garfield, and then it's like computer animated Garfield. So it's like a cat.
See, fake cats, fake dogs, fake cats.
No.
Apples and oranges.
No, these statements do not reflect the feelings of Tom and Hank.
They don't. I really believe
in about them. The 80s industries.
I believe in dogs. I do. I believe in them.
In what manner?
Well, you know.
I do know.
Do they read comic books? No. Do they listen to New Order? No. Do I like them? They're fine.
Did you like Garfield?
I did. I love reading the Sunday papers because on Sundays, you know, oftentimes Sundays were family days for us. In the early days, they would be like church days, I've mentioned. But, you know, later on, they were less church days than they were like, let's go have breakfast at Cal's Diner and get, you know, French toast and all kinds of yummy stuff. And then we'll go to the flea market. So that, like, you know, hour or so that we were sitting at Cal's Diner eating our breakfast potatoes and our biscuits and gravy would be spent, my parents would be reading the paper and my sister and I would get the comics, the Sunday funnies. And so I loved reading those, you know, Family Circle and Hagar. And there was one that I always wanted to like that I just didn't like because I didn't understand it. But I think I would like it now. And that was featured in Sundays, and it was called Prince Valiant. And Prince Valiant was an old school, like, medieval prince, and it was drawn really well, like, not in a caricature, funny, goofy way, but in like a real, they were drawn really well.
Okay.
And I wanted to love Prince Valiant, but I just didn't get it. I just didn't understand it. It was over my head, and it probably had been serialized and over. You know, a couple of decades probably. I'm sure it had been around.
Oh, so it had been around for a while. I don't recognize it. Okay. Oh, yeah, it was...
He had his black bob haircut and his cool, like, Robin Hood outfit and...
Nice bob, though.
Very, very. Yeah, that's him. That's him.
Okay, I don't remember that at all. Interesting. That may have just been regional. Maybe not carried in other, you know, everyone or our little Fargo forum in North Dakota.
Garfield was a big one. I loved reading. I read probably every comic. I didn't get many of them, and some of them just were never funny at all, ever, once.
Well, like some aren't, like Mary Worth.
Yeah.
Was like a heightened soap opera comic strip. My thing, and it says a lot about me now as an adult man, my favorite, and now I can see why, was Hagar the Horrible.
I love him.
I loved him, but he's also like a bear with a big beard.
Didn't they make a movie about him too?
Oh, I don't know, maybe.
His wife kind of ran the whole thing.
Or a special.
Maybe it was a special.
That's the fun thing about specials, like, obviously, Peanuts was a comic strip, and then they started to do the specials in the 60s, right? Late 50s and 60s. Then, in the 80s, they did take a lot of these and turn them into specials. In the 70s, it happened not so much with a comic strip or a comic, but with books. The Berenstain Bears.
Yeah, right.
They started to do a lot of specials around them. And then Garfield actually had a bunch of specials.
And we know about the Berenstain weirdness, right?
Yeah, because it's spelled Berenstain.
It's not. It's spelled Berenstain. And it's one of those weird misconceptions, like when people get a movie line wrong.
Yes.
That everyone remembers it being the Berenstain Bears, but it has never been the Berenstain Bears ever. It has always been the Berenstain Bears.
How's it spelled?
Berenstain, Berenstain Bears. But everyone remembers it, and it turned into this whole entire thing, like, throughout the world where people were like, no, I remember for a fact it's Berenstain. And they're like, they were Christians, and it was a conspiracy to change their last name so that people didn't relate it to a Jewish name. But when you do research, you actually realize that that's completely false, that it has always been Berenstain Bears since its conception.
Inception.
Monostolonialception.
You're incepting me.
I accept.
So, well, that's interesting. Back to
if
what I was
completely
saying.
Off topic.
Well, it is a little bit off topic, but that's okay. So Garfield had special, so we could see and we could hear John.
Yeah.
And I think Garfield had a voice. Yeah, I think it was Frank Oz.
Didn't he talk like inside of his head?
Yes.
He didn't actually have like
a moving mouth. Yeah. And so with that then came a few specials of a beloved yet hated comic strip that I want to talk about. And it was called Kathy.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember Kathy?
I loved Kathy. She had her little heart shirt.
Yes, she had a little... So Kathy was a... So in the comic strip world, there's serials, like, you know, serial comic strips where you're following a story and there may be a through line going through every day. You know, obviously you might concentrate on one thing one day, but there's always... You learn and you know about these people. And there might be a story you follow. Then there's others that are called a gag-a-day comic strip, and Kathy was one of those. It came out in 1976, hitting its huge popularity in 82 or 3. It just became this thing that everyone read Kathy.
I totally remember reading
So it's about a woman, Kathy, and written and drawn by Kathy Geiswhite. It was originally kind of based on her life, and then she just saw this thing where she wanted to look at the struggles of a single woman through the four basic guilt groups of life.
Interesting.
And that is food, love, family, and work. It's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah.
And so it kind of like gently pokes fun at like the lives of modern women. Yet there's a lot of people that look at it in different ways.
Sure.
Kathy loved chocolate. So there would be one frame where she'd say, chocolate, chocolate, chocolate. And then the next one, she was like, ack.
Ack. I remember that.
That was a big thing. Like, whenever she did something, like, and she was like, ack, and holding her hands up and with a real exasperated look on her face. So some of the, like, some of her characteristics made fun of and then sometimes fed into the negative stereotypes thing of women with the chocolate. And, you know, she couldn't find a dress that she wanted. And, you know, so it really kind of fed into what was trying to not happen at that point with, like, the power suits and business, you know, women in business. And it's so interesting going off topic.
It's our specialty.
It is the midterm time right now. So I don't listen to the radio and I don't watch live TV. Don't get me wrong. I watch plenty of TV. Just don't watch it live. And then during a podcast today, there's a new podcast that's coming out. I should know what it is, but it's from Earwolf. And it is looking at how this midterm seems it's going to change the game and put way more women than ever into power. And there's a politician who's speaking, and she said, we need a seat at the table. And the reason that we're having to fight for it is because it was made by white men, and we never had a seat at that table. We just got it, like, 2 decades ago. So now we're trying. So now it's not that we're, you know, like, trying to take things from white men. We are trying to be equal like we are and have a seat at the table. And it was just a very kind of simple, like, yep, this is what's happening. We weren't around for the creation of it, so now we have to change that.
Yeah.
And now we have to be a part of it. So
then you got a bunch of big fucking white babies up there going,
we're men and we just don't get it.
Ugh, we're boy. Fucking sick of us.
I'm sick of us. I cannot be sick enough of gross white men like myself and others.
And me. God.
And you.
We're disgusting.
So anyway, I hope you're enjoying this. Back to the regular programming. Initially. Kathy met her longtime boyfriend, and I want to say that they got, like, I remember him, Irving, her boyfriend Irving.
I couldn't remember.
I remember him from the 80s. So she finally had Irving propose to Kathy on Valentine's Day 2004.
Oh, wow.
then they the characters married on February 5th, 2005 in that day's comic strip.
Huh.
So that same year, Kathy appeared in a big 75th anniversary party for Blondie and Dagwood. So there was apparently a really cool anniversary, like, set of comics for Blondie and Dagwood, since they were both turning 75. And they interwove all these different characters who had been around for a long time. And Kathy was in it.
Oh, that's cool.
So I don't know how that would go, but I'm sure they pulled it off.
That was one of my favorites.
Kathy?
Blondie.
Oh, my God.
I loved it. I don't know if it was the art or, I mean, obviously I'm into, like, the whole vintage thing. Like, even when it was contemporary at the time in the 80s, they still looked vintage and old. I just love that. I love them.
And Blondie was around forever.
Yeah.
And so on August 11th, 2010, Kathy Geiswhite announced her decision to end the run of Kathy. So on October 3rd, it was the final strip ran with the revelation that Kathy is pregnant with a little girl.
And she's overdosed.
Jesus.
It's a cliffhanger.
Whoa.
I mean, she's like, I'm not coming back. So Jesus. I need you guys all to.
My God.
I need you to stick with me on this one. This is going to end real obscure.
Whoa, what's your next pick? Or what is your first pick?
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about comic books.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I loved reading the Sunday Funnies, but I got into a couple comic books just in general. Now, in the early days, it was what we were talking about. Was it Harvey Comics? that put out the Richie Rich and...
Yeah,
and,
I think it is. Yes,
and all that. And so, you know, looked at those and loved those. And I remember at the Camp Evers Market, which was on the corner, which is one of the very first little shopping areas in Scotts Valley, which really consisted of like a parking lot and a small strip of old buildings, probably built in the 30s, 1930s and 1940s. Mm-hmm. But Camp Evers had Camp Evers Supermarket. My parents owned, in the early 80s, they owned a photography studio on the other side of Camp Evers Market called Rainbow Photo. And they had their photography studio, and that was a business that they tried to run for a little while. And so my sister and I would run over, and we would get, you know, like Star Wars comics and stuff. But I got really into the little Disneyland comic books that were about 5 inches high by about 5 inches. They were about an inch and a half thick. They were really small comics, but they were thick. They were fat. They had tons of little comics in it. And they were all black and white, not color. And in the corner, they had the little flip animation. So when you flipped through it really quickly, you could see, you know, Donald Duck, you know, flapping his wings and yelling or whatever. Do you have some information for us?
Harvey Comics.
Harvey Comics,
okay. Is who did Baby Huey, Casper, Wendy, Richie Rich, Little Audrey.
I remember that, but I didn't read
it. And then Little Lotta.
I remember that, too.
And then they also did Mutt and Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
And Sad Sack, which was also a...
Oh, yeah. Sad Sack. I forgot. Sad Sack was one of the ones I loved to read on the Sunday paper.
Was Baby Huey, was that a huge duck?
I don't know. It was a...
Baby Huey was a humongous duck that they took care of like a baby.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, looks a little bit like Donald, surprisingly.
Trump.
It actually really does. That's our first Trump joke. All right.
Oh, five, five.
Let the hate mail flow in. All
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Everyone who listens to this is for sure Republicans.
But yeah, so those early ones were a lot of fun. But, you know, as I've mentioned many times before, my dad was a science fiction person.
Yes.
And one day he came home and said, I have a comic book for you. And this is a comic book I read when I was a kid. And I found a copy for you at Atlantis Fantasy World, the sci-fi comic book shop, sci-fi fantasy comic book shop in Santa Cruz, still in business.
Is that?
It is. And it was a comic book called Blackhawk. And I was like, what? This is so fucking cool. And Blackhawk was like a military organization. They wore all black. Like in these cool, they almost look like, you know, like Nazi uniforms almost. They were very militaristic black uniforms that they wore. And they flew these really cool sort of pseudo World War II planes and these pseudo World War II sort of early jets. And they had these crazy submarines. And I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. And so I had one issue of this Black Hawk comic that featured a submarine. I don't know whatever happened to it. I have looked everywhere on the internet for some reference to this particular comic, and I could not find it. So Black Hawk was one of my favorites for the one that I had. Never had another one ever the rest of my life. But I did some Black Hawk research, and I was like, oh, my God, it goes way back. It goes way back to, like, the 40s. And it is just awesome. It's this beautiful old-time style art. In the category of like the spirit, Will Eisner's The Spirit, and those old crime, anti-Nazi propaganda comics, like Wonder Woman.
Did you read those types of stuff? Did you read like, you know, like the one of the biggest Batman books that are sold was a group of Batman comics that came out. It's the one with the Joker on it.
No, I didn't really read. I didn't read superhero stuff.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I wasn't really into superheroes.
I think maybe I had some Spider-Man because of Elektra Company.
Oh yeah, okay.
Of that their live-action thing. Yeah. I think that's why.
But from Blackhawk and going to like the flea market with my dad and going to model building conventions and comic book conventions and things like that, I started getting into Sergeant Rock. Sergeant Rock was, you know, like the old school from the 50s and 60s, the old school World War II comic book. That was, you know, that was this grizzled World War II sergeant, you know, with his, you know, six stripes on his helmet and his clothes all torn up and ripped to shreds with bandoliers of ammo going across his thing, you know, bulging muscles. I mean, this guy was just the coolest. And so Sergeant Rock led me into a comic book called Our Country at War, which was another, it had, you know, like a compilation of comics within. So there would be one story about a Vietnam fighter pilot in an F-4 Phantom jet over North Vietnam. The next one would be a World War II story. Then there would be a Korean War story. And so I got really into those. And then a little comic book came out when I was turning 16 years old. And that was a comic book called The Nom. And The Nom was the very first comic book specifically about the American experience in the Vietnam War.
Oh, wow. And that came out in the mid-80s?
It came out in 1986 and was in publication until 1993. Marvel put it out. It was a darker style comic book.
Yeah. More like a graphic novel type feel?
It was sort of the beginning of that more like realistic story and more realistic artwork. Hold on. And it was written by a guy named Doug Murray, who was also a Vietnam veteran. In fact, when he started writing for it, he was only 36 years old. And so the Vietnam War had only happened a decade plus before he started writing this. It was still really fresh in people's minds and still had a very negative connotation behind it.
Well, I was just sitting here thinking that. You know, it's interesting. We were alive during the Vietnam War, but we were babies. And then we were taught about how the veterans had such a bad time coming back and a hard time coming back. Everything was televised, but it wasn't anything that was really talked about.
It wasn't talked about.
You know, there were several men in the town where I grew up that were for sure in Vietnam, but no one spoke of it. And it's something now that, you know, since the 80s, the mid 80s, when Platoon.
Well, ironically, Platoon came out in the same year.
Interesting.
The same year as the comic book The Nom came out.
And there were so many, then there were so many films about it, and there were these real, very gritty films.
Well, all the films up until Platoon, all the films about the Vietnam War were stories about going back to rescue POWs, going back to the war, this time we're going to win. And it was these super, like, weird, misdirected, patriotic stories about going back and doing it right this time with a small force of commandos, and they're gonna rescue these guys that are in these tiger cages, you know, that have been there for 15 years until Platoon came out.
Yeah.
And so, you know, on the heels of Platoon was this comic called The Nom.
Wow.
Doug Murray, the writer, was when he was in high school, he lost his student deferment against the war due to a basketball injury. He didn't go to school for a year, and so he lost his deferment and then got drafted in 1968. He ended up spending 4 years in the U.S. Army as a staff sergeant. He did two tours in Vietnam. When he first went in, he was very much pro-war. He thought the war sounded like a great idea. He was all about it. He was caught in an ambush one night and received extensive wounds from shrapnel from an explosion going off next to him.
Okay.
So his body was covered in chunks of metal, basically, and spent several months recuperating in a military hospital. and then by 1971, he was like, I think this isn't such a good idea now. He spent 2 years there. Also, the editor of the NOM was a guy named Larry Hama. And Larry Hama's name sounded really familiar to me, and I realized why. And it's because when I watched that documentary that I'm recommending to everyone to watch called The Toys That Made Us, it's on Netflix, it's a Netflix series.
Yes.
His name popped up because he was one of the original creators of the G.I. Joe comic book. So I was like, well, I want to know more about him. And I had known from this documentary that he was a veteran of Vietnam. And it turns out he was there in Vietnam in the same years that Doug Murray was, from 1969 to 1971. He was in the 18th Engineer Brigade and was a firearms and explosive ordnance expert. So he had expertise in all of these things that would soon become staples for the NOM and also for G.I. Joe in terms of equipment and tactics and the clothing that they wore and the uniforms that they wore. He had a few parts as an actor. He was in an episode of MASH called The Korean Doctor.
Oh, wow.
And or The Korean Surgeon, I believe it was called. So if you go back and watch, he's in one of those. He did a couple small shows on Broadway.
Oh, interesting.
He made a living off of acting for about a year, and he's like, I'm not into this. I don't want to do this. He was contacted, and he said, well, we have this idea. We need somebody to do this. He's like, I'm the guy. So the NOM follows a fictional character named Private First Class Edward Marks. He's in the 23rd Infantry, and it's a story about his platoon and the experiences that they have fighting against the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese Army between 1965 and 1973. So each issue of the comic occurs 1 month after the previous issue. So the issue will happen, and then a month will go by, and you'll see, you know, and now our guys are here and this and that.
So it's taking it like real time.
Yes. And then the guy who did the artwork for it, in addition to Larry Hama, was a guy named Michael Golden. I didn't really know Michael Golden. I don't know his name very well. But when I did a little research, I found out he actually also did covers for several of the G.I. Joe comics. He did primarily covers, apparently. But he worked on the Micronauts back in 1978. And Micronauts were a thing that I really loved. Do you remember the Micronauts?
I do,
They predated Star Wars.
Yeah, I do remember
with
them.
That size. So he worked on issues of Doctor Strange and also of Howard the Duck comic book.
Great. I was just going to bring Howard the Duck up.
Which just won't go away.
It just won't.
But yeah, so the NOM was really cool. And I remember reading it at Robbie's house, and he would get the new issue of the NOM, and it had, you know, everything was right. We looked at all the photographs. We had books about Vietnam. We knew all about the equipment and what was the difference between American equipment and American uniforms and Vietnamese Army uniforms and Viet Cong uniforms and the weapons that they used. And so we were all like experts at that. And so when the NOM came out, it like spoke to us because, well, they got everything right.
Yeah.
And of course, years later, now I know why.
Please tell me again, remind me, was your dad in Vietnam?
My dad did not go to Vietnam. My dad was very opposed to Vietnam. He did not like the idea of having to go. And, you know, my mom got pregnant in 1969, and that was the year he got drafted. And he decided, you know, when you get drafted, you have a choice. You go to the Navy, the Army, the Marines, or whatever. And he's like, well, I'm going into the Air Force then, because those guys aren't, like, fighting on the ground. Well, so he went to boot camp, Air Force boot camp at Lackland Air Force Base in 1969, and spent 90 days there and was able to secure himself through conversations with a priest on the base, because my dad was Roman Catholic, secure himself an honorable discharge and did not have to go to Vietnam.
Wow.
Because I was born.
Yep.
And my mother threatened to abandon me if he went to Vietnam, and he decided that he had to take care of this child, instead of going to fight for his country, and it has left him with extreme guilt over many decades.
Wow.
But he made a decision that he felt was the right decision, and he stood his ground, and he said, "This is not right. I am not going." But the guilt that he has experienced since then, with his friends all going, and
yes.
You know, my mom's very first boyfriend was Andy Zuffy, was killed in combat in Vietnam very early in the war. And so my dad was my mom's second boyfriend. Her first boyfriend was killed in Vietnam. And so she did not want him to go.
Of course.
So, no, he did not go.
Wow.
And he has an honorable discharge, but it's very his feelings are very complicated.
Of course.
And I feel really bad for him because, you know, I don't know if I would have been able to make that same decision.
Yeah.
And if I would be able to, you know, a lot of guys ran. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys went to Mexico, went to Canada, mm-hmm. burned their draft cards, went to jail. My dad didn't want to do any of those things. He felt he still wanted to be responsible and do what he needed to do to take care of a child. And then I was born and, you know, a year later, my sister was born. Or about a year later, my sister was born, and yeah. But so I didn't realize when I was a kid that those were feelings that my dad was experiencing and thinking about. That guilt of watching his friends go and him not going, but still feeling like he was doing what he believed was the right thing to do.
Yep.
And to be honest, a lot of guys went to Vietnam and they knew it wasn't the right thing for them, and it did ruin a lot of their lives. And had an interesting conversation with a friend this weekend about his dad's experience in Vietnam and his life afterwards and what his life was like. And so it's all very complicated. You know, I am proud of my dad for making that decision. I know he feels shame about it.
Yep.
But I'm sure. I'm proud of him for making that decision.
So to go from that, and which is, I'm so happy you said it because it's important that people think about this type of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and Vietnam was so vilified too, you know. And
the thing for me is that my friends and I played Vietnam. That was our World War II of my dad's generation. My dad grew up playing World War II, you know, and invading the beaches and you know, killing the Germans and the Japanese. And my friends and I's thing, it was different. We were into this thing that was so closely related to us in terms of time that I didn't even realize until I was much older how close all that was to us.
Yep.
You know, so in 1986, you know, the war ended in 75. In 1986, it had only been 11 years.
Yeah, and it was still so fresh. That's why I say not a lot of people talked about it.
And so I think my dad, you know, my dad... That I think that sort of made him even more be like, why is my son playing this war game?
And I can't even imagine.
He couldn't stop us. He couldn't stop me from being interested in this thing. And
it's so interesting. Well, you know, another part of comic books, too, was the ads in them.
Yeah.
And one of the ads was for like 1,000 army men.
Yeah. I loved it. I got it one time.
Like me too. It was like $1.
The little flat army men.
And they sent you all the real flat little army men. They were little. Little.
Yeah.
And, but that was, you know, those ads always got me. And that army man thing was, it was an attractive thing. It was always like cops and rubbers.
Yeah,
or let's play army. Let's, you know, it was such a, you know, you would just say play army and everyone would know.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, you're going to do a war thing.
I still do it. Reenacting.
I know.
I still do. We call it reenacting now.
Now, yeah.
It's still playing army.
And you're the army man.
Yeah.
So, you know, as going to those little ads, you know, when you hear me say this phrase, all of you are going to go, oh, my God. But the art instruction schools of Minneapolis, Minnesota, where in the magazines and in comic books, there would be the Tubby the Turtle and the Pirate.
And the lady that I don't remember.
And well, I think what we remember would be, I think there was like a fish.
Maybe it was a fish or something, yeah.
And so like you could, you know, draw, if you could, you know, you want to learn how to draw this, and then you would order it and they would send you this art course. And it was like a little paper booklet and teaching you like how to kind of like dot draw, like you put the dots and then you connect the dots. But I did it a couple times. And then the Charles Atlas ads.
I was a 98-pound weakling.
And And now I can teach you how to be strong. And was it a little book?
I guess it was a book. I just remember the little, it had a little mini comic at the top or at the bottom. And it was of like a kid, like a guy at the beach, and some big, you know, brutish dude comes up and kicks sand in his face. And his girlfriend's like, "You're a pussy." And he's like, "God, if only I wasn't so skinny and so ugly and so stupid and I just had this hot body like this guy, maybe I could get the girls." And of course, he takes the Charles Atlas course and then he has all the girls at the end. So,
well, yeah, from weakling to heartthrob or something, it was. So, also a big one, we saw the ad tonight. We both were like, "Oh, sea monkeys."
Oh, my God. Well, how about the monkey ad?
Oh, yeah, there was a monkey. There was an ad where you were like, "Get a real teacup-sized monkey mailed to you." And I was like, whoa.
I remember wanting sea monkeys so bad and my mom going, "Tommy, they're not actually sea monkeys. They're just little shrimp." And I'm like, "They're sea monkeys. It shows it on the cover.
I'm going to raise a family.
Look at them. They have faces and they stand with their hands on their hips and they pose and for family portraits." And she's like, they're just, and so one time Stormy up the street, my neighbor up the street, got a thing of sea monkeys. And I was like, "Fuck yeah, dude." And I ran up there. "Where's the sea monkeys?" He's like, "Here they are." And we were like,
"What are those, shrimp?
Are they little shrimp or something?" They sent them in little freeze-dried packets.
Yeah, I remember. I got them once or twice.
That's creepy.
Whoa. And then, so it would be like a... And then there was one, it was like Olympic prizes and cash. So it was like, you could sell these cards and gifts.
Yeah.
And sell them and then send in the order. And then they would send you, you'd get paid for sending in the order.
I remember sitting down and like, they had pictures of all the prizes. And I remember circling the bow and arrow.
Yep.
The remote control jet, the remote control helicopter. I want all that stuff. You know, the fake handcuffs. I always hit this lamp.
You always hit this
lamp. I feel like if I don't hit the lamp or the painting behind me, that I'm not...
You're not doing your job.
Am I even here?
You've been real existential tonight.
I think that has to do with the fake dog thing. It's really.
I think it does too.
Ruffled my fur.
So, I want to talk about a few more. So I'm going to do two in one, and we'll go through them a little bit. And it's Bloom County and the Far Side.
I love Far Side, man. I mean,
me too. And so they're kind of close, don't you think?
No.
You don't?
No, Far Side was one frame.
Yeah, Far Side, but like in their esotericness, in their weirdness.
Well, that's true, for sure. My dad was super into Bill the Cat.
Well, yeah, so Bloom County followed the talking penguin Opus. The disgusting cat, Bill the Cat. He was like so gross.
My dad loved it.
And their human companions. And it really is a decade defining.
It is. It's like comic strip. Max Headroom of the comic book world.
It really is. Like it was from 1980 to 1989. So it was literally the decade.
Oh, wow.
And because it was daily, he always was right on the pulse of what was happening.
Yes.
You know, and so very political.
Still, he does writing.
Yeah. He's still...
Gary Trudeau.
Gary, yep. And it was... No. Gary Trudeau, that is Doonesbury.
Sorry. Don't cut that out.
Doonesbury.
Don't let me have
that. Huh?
Not Bloom County. Doonesbury. Different. Doonesbury came out in the 80s too, though.
I think so. And that was very political.
I'm just going to look that up real quick.
And that is, and so Bloom County is Berkeley Breathed.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
And, he won the Pulitzer Prize for editorial cartooning in 1987. And it just was this kind of bright star, and it was extremely popular. Right away, they started producing books of the strips.
I remember. The books, again, still in print.
Still in print and are still sold, still sell, I should say. And so it spun off a couple. So it spun off a Sunday-only strip called Outland from 1989 to 1995. That was pretty big. That kind of took over after. It was only Sunday. It was not weekday. And Opus from 2003 to 2008. He came back and just did Opus.
I don't remember that.
And so they're, you know, they're considered moderately funny, but not, you know, not the cutting edge kind of wit. And it's just still very, you know, they still make stuffed animals of Opus, and they, you know, there's still this huge commerce. The other one, The Far Side, started in 1980, and it was a one-panel, simple comic, and it showed a unique like perspective on like the absurd parts of life.
Yeah.
And there were no recurring characters. You know, it wasn't like people that you got to know. It was a lot of cows.
And cavemen.
And cavemen.
And fags.
So it was like recurring. Some of those characters, a bunch of the cows, bunch of the cavemen, were the same ones, but they weren't every day. You know, it'd be like every few weeks we'd see them. And the,
they had, sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say the absurd faces. Yes. A lot of like glasses and a lot of like, they make the dumb people kind of like have a couple teeth sticking out of the side of their mouth.
And like... Well, and so this is written and drawn by Gary Larson. And so he did have that, you know, it's all about subversiveness. It was extremely subversive.
And there's like 10 different comics that are directly stolen and influenced from The Far Side. Non sequitur, I think, is one of them.
Yes, it is.
Yep. And it's the same type of weird art and it's the same type of weird humor.
Yes. And so it was in nearly 2,000 papers.
Wow.
Which was a really big thing. And it was, you know, people, it was one of those things that people looked at every day. They wanted to look at it every single day, you know, because you wanted to see what he did. And it was so,
yeah,
you know, of the day.
I'm, to this day, I'm a huge Far Side fan.
So there's a 23 compilation Far Side books, and all of them have reached the top of the New York Times bestseller list when they came out.
Wow.
But after it ended, he's done a few things here and there, like put out some calendars in the last few years and things like that. But otherwise, he's been very, very quiet since ending.
I mean,
since
that's
ending
a lot
it.
Of comics to write. Just, I guess people get burned out. Do you remember any of the of your favorites?
I don't.
One of my favorites is it's like a shark that's swimming, and it swims up to the shore, and it's basically there's these people playing in the water, and it's like, man, I came like 70 miles, you know, for a pack of ketchup. Like, what? And there's like a ketchup packet floating in the water.
They were funny, and I think they would probably hold up.
There's the one where the warthog or whatever walks inside the house, and up behind him is a bunch of trophies, hunting trophies, but they're all people's heads.
Oh, yeah.
Like, really funny, weird, like...
Well, here, the thing about Far Side now is that you still see the Far Side greeting cards.
Oh, yeah. We have them at my work.
And they're so funny. They're still so funny, and they haven't been... They're 30 years old. And they're still so funny. People still buy them in droves because a proven thing is a proven thing.
Yeah.
Do you have another one?
Well, I just, you know, back to comic books. One of the comic books that I really loved that I briefly mentioned earlier was G.I. Joe, Real American Hero. Mm. And that has a fascinating history, how it came to be. It is the very first comic book to be advertised on television. Basically, they wanted to make these toys, and they needed something to go along with the toys. Star Wars figures had Star Wars films, and, you know, this and that had these films and these movies and these shows, and they didn't have anything like that for G.I. Joe. So when they created G.I. Joe, it was they came out with a line of toys, and they released it in 1982 with this comic book. And then later on, I think right around that same time, a cartoon that would be after school every day.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, was also a Marvel comic. It was in production from 1982 to 1994. Now, it is in other realms and other series still going on. But at the time, in 1985, it was Marvel's top-selling title. Hmm. It beat out every other superhero comic. And again, it was written and created by Larry Hama, who I mentioned earlier, who did the Nom. And he created the whole entire thing. He came up with this idea and, you know, he was like, sure, I'll do it. He's like, but I don't really know about a story. And so they're like, well, we trust what you're going to do. And so basically what he did is he would make up a story. And he would not know how the storyline ended until he got to it. It would all be just coming out of his mind as he was writing it. So he had no idea where the story would go when he did it. It has 155 issues. Michael Golden, who I mentioned earlier, did some of the covers. Featured the first 12 or 13 of the original G.I. Joe, a real American hero, yeah, action figures. The cool thing about it is it became like an instant hit. The comic book became an instant hit, but the TV show became an instant hit because it was had all these realistic jets,
yeah,
and realistic, you know, types of guns and high technology. And they, you know, they fought against Cobra, which was the big terrorist organization of the time. They were able to introduce new characters into the comic book and into the cartoon that they would later turn into the actual action figures.
Oh, okay.
So the Baroness, which is one of the evil Cobra operatives, which is my favorite. She basically looks like my girlfriend with a black suit and a machine gun with a scope on it. But she wears big round glasses and she had big, dark, long flowing hair. And what was cool about the Baroness's hair, the actual action figure, is that it was rubber, where everyone else's was molded plastic. Mm. Hers looked like real hair almost.
Cool.
But so they were able to introduce these characters, and then they would have an ad and be like, hey, you know, the new G.I. Joe line's coming out next year, and here's what's featured, you know, the Baroness, Destro, Zartan, and you get to see all this stuff. And so my friends, you know, Robbie and I, we would get off from school in high school in, you know, 84, 85, 86, and we would race straight to his house because he had cable, and we would sit down and watch it, and then we would play G.I. Joe's for the next, you know, 6 hours until we had to go to bed. But it was just an awesome, it was an awesome cartoon, an awesome comic book. I remember I got a part of the G.I. Joe fan club early on from the comic. In the back of the comic book, you could cut out a little thing, and if you join the fan club, you get certain things. And one of those things was like a limited edition Cobra Commander action figure. You got like a pair of dog tags, which I believe I still have, that say Tommy Levy on it. 374 Sand Hill Road, Scotts Valley. and so anyway, I loved reading the comics and then acting out the scenes because all the comics had all the toys that we had,
yep,
and everything just went together. And it was sort of a first for comic books and toys, how it came about.
Marketing genius.
Marketing. They're like, we don't have anything to go with this G.I. Joe. And they're like, we'll make a cartoon.
Yep.
We'll make a comic book. Oh, we already have the comic book written, they said. We already have the story for the cartoon ready to go. And the executives were like, you do? And they're like, yeah, fuck, let's get on this shit quick. And so it just has an interesting history. And I have one G.I. Joe comic book left.
You do?
One. That's all.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fun. You love your G.I. Joe.
I do.
You love your G.I. Joe. Okay, so we need to wrap up because I'm actually hosting a story event tonight where I'm emceeing an event and I am late. But I do want to mention...
talking about non-flashbacks.
I do want to mention very quickly because we would be remiss if we didn't, Calvin and Hobbes.
Oh, yeah.
A Daily and Weekend Strip, becoming books that are still huge sellers. It's Bill Waterston. It's just wonderful. It's heartwarming and wonderful. It centers on 6-year-old Calvin and his stuffed tiger Hobbes. And the beauty of the concept is that Hobbes is only alive in Calvin's imagination. Mm-hmm. So when the parents are around, Hobbes is literally just a stuffed animal, and yeah, he's drawn that way. And when It's just he and Calvin, and they're on their adventures. He's a full-blown tiger.
It's so clever.
And it's so clever, and it's so cute and beautiful. And he did it for 10 years, and he's, you know, all these awards. And so he was fiercely protective of the comic strip as an art form, and he allowed practically no merchandising or alternate formats for Calvin to be licensed to. They made Calvin and Hobbes stuffed animals, but really, and so his legend, his reclusiveness is so legendary that there is a 2013 documentary called Dear Mr. Watterson.
Oh, really?
Where they try and find him and have him talk and he won't. And so I want to please rate, review, and listen. This was fun. I like this one a lot. We had more to say, I think, too. A lot more to say. But please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. It really does make a difference to us. And we've had a few great weeks. So thanks, everybody, so much. And tell your friends. And Instagram, our website is tomandhank.com. And
do we have a link to our Instagram on our website?
We do.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we have a link to our Instagram, our Twitter, and our Facebook.
And if you want to see cool pictures of us and things like that, you have to go to our Instagram.
Yep, and there's a link right there at tomandhank.com. Otherwise, on Instagram, it's TomHankTalk80s, and it's the number 80. So thank you so much, everyone.
Thanks again.
Have a wonderful day. Stay awesome.
Stay rad.
Bye.
Bye.